talk about me when I'm gone. Ooh, honey, though our friendship ceases from now on. And listen, if you can't say anything real nice, it's better not to talk at all, is my advice. We're parting, you go your way, I'll go mine, it's best that we do. Here's a kiss, I hope that this brings lots of luck to you. Oh, makes no difference how I carry on. Remember, please don't talk about me when I'm gone.
Baby, please don't talk about me when I'm gone. In fact, it said on that song, don't talk. I like that. Dino, one of my favorite singers. Think he's better than Sinatra myself. Well, let's see what we got going here. This is April the 3rd, fourth month, third day. Thursday today here in the Midwest, and it's raining like a cow peeing on a flat rock. If you've ever seen that, it's something else. You better stay out of the way because it splatters, man. Yeah, getting a lot of rains today, but at least it's not snowing, and that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And don't forget to get your donations in for the radio show to P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. I think almost everybody's caught up, but if you're not, the radio show might disappear one of these days. Well, I see we have a mestizo, maybe, that, of course, sometimes people have Spanish names that aren't mestizos, but we have a possible mestizo outbreak on Fort Hood, Texas again. There must be something in the water out there. Well, I don't know what to say about that. But I will say this before you believe everything you hear. Consider the fact that hundreds of thousands of these guys that were in the Middle East and around this depleted uranium ammo and depleted uranium ammo trash dumps and all that kind of stuff, that you consider the fact that I have said for a long time that there's going to be more and more of these kind of situations because of depleted uranium poisoning. But yet they still don't want to talk much about it at all. Plenty of cases like this where somebody goes along just fine and then all of a sudden, boom, they blow up and kill everybody around them. And if this government's not admitting it, just like Agent Orange, that's our problem. And they probably will deny it right on up to, you know, till they absolutely have to, until the peasants are at the gates, you know. Well, yesterday we started off with a little bit about mapping and compass reading and all that kind of stuff. And that's what the guy's got to say here is quite important, and I want to play out the rest of that clip. That you're going to find out that in which you may already know that there, there's no place to hide as far as telephones are concerned. The only good telephone is one that you throw away. So let's see if I can find a little more of that interview.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the great story of maps and navigation from ancient Polynesian sailors to our era when everyone and everything is increasingly mapped, located all the time. Hiawatha Bray is with us. His new book is You Are Here, From the Compass to GPS, the History and Future of How We Find Ourselves. You can join us. What's it mean to live in a world where we're always mapped, always tracked? Are you okay with that? Is that the new convenience? Is it just being in community? Is it creepy? Or do you want to be able to get lost? Where's Malaysian Airlines Flight 370 if maps are so great these days? Funny and not funny right there. Things are changing. Here's 1939, Wizard of Oz. Dorothy, Judy Garland, has to figure out for herself where she's landed after getting caught in a tornado.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. We must be over the rainbow.
Yeah, the world of mapping has changed. The company Hero offers a watch with a GPS device so parents can always know exactly where their kids are. Hear from their video.
Current GPS products are not designed with young kids and parents in mind. So we involved kids from day one to develop the smallest, coolest GPS tracking device designed specifically for kids.
It's the big turn that Hiawatha Bray makes in his book, You Are Here, from mapping the world to humans being mapped. And the need, maybe now, for each of us to think about a cocoon of locational privacy. I mean, companies do it.
Yep.
Governments do it. We've learned in the last year. The United States government does it to the NSA. Edward Snowden has laid out clearly for us. Describe the extent to which we are now the material of maps, mapping.
Well, pretty much universally, at least based on what we are getting from some of the Snowden revelations. I always try to take it with a grain of salt because we cannot be absolutely sure that everything Edward Snowden is saying is gospel truth. But a lot of it seems to be, there seems to be enough evidence to support the idea that a great deal of it is true. And, you know, there are reports to the effect that the U.S. government is, at least not necessarily domestically, but outside of the United States, snapping up location data on hundreds of millions of cell phones as a matter of course. And that, of course, would include Americans traveling abroad. The Washington Post recently reported that, and it's just startling to think that they could have that kind of information. But just to give you another example, which I found really startling, one of my colleagues at The Globe wrote a piece recently about how private companies are using this technology called license plate cameras mm-hmm. to basically take pictures of millions of license plates on millions of American automobiles and store that information away. Now, if you do that over a period of months or years, you basically know where everyone in America is driving and can look it up whenever you want it if you have enough cameras in enough places. Now, we already knew that police agencies were doing this, but now we find out that private corporations do it. And the danger here, and we see this with the examples of what the NSA does with companies like Google and Microsoft, mm-hmm. you know that a private company has this data, and you might not even mind if a private company has this data, because private companies don't run maximum security prisons. Mm. But now the government goes to these agencies and says, give us what you've been collecting on these people. And suddenly, all this information that you thought was just being used to advertise to you is now being used to engage in criminal or national security investigations, and there's really not a lot of limit right now on what kinds of stuff the government can collect.
Researchers have found, you're right, to just track our cell phones' usage patterns over a three-month period. You can predict where a person will be with 93% accuracy after 3 months. Mm-hmm. And now you're talking about keeping track, mapping us over time. You can reach back in time to see where have they been, mm-hmm. imagine where we may go. Of course, a lot of people opting into this. I mean,
sure.
Foursquare and all these apps where people are saying, They're punching in themselves. Here I am. Here's where I am now. Here's where I am now. Here's where I am now. So their friends will know they're in community while they're in motion.
Oh, absolutely. The appeal of knowing where you are and letting other people know you are is immense. I mean, that's one of the reasons this is happening. Most of us are not hermits. We don't mind some people knowing where we are. And that's why we always or almost always opt in. And this seems like a perfectly sensible thing to do until you suddenly realize, there was one survey that was done that found that half the apps on the typical smartphone are recording your location. So, and not just you, Angry Birds. When you run Angry Birds on your phone, The company that makes Angry Birds is getting a report on where you are.
And when you stop playing Angry Birds?
Actually, according to a study that was done by MIT back in 2012, I don't know if they've changed it since then, but they found that the Angry Birds app kept on telling them where you are even when you stop playing the game. It was like, what? Wait a minute. Because it's mainly for advertising purposes, but a huge percentage of the apps we run are tracking us. So each company that makes that app, they know where you are, and they know where you are, and they know where you are. Dozens, hundreds potentially of businesses all knowing where you are.
We mapped the earth, and now we map ourselves. Mm-hmm. Hiawatha Bray is with me in the studio. Richard is calling from Mystic, Connecticut. Richard, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Fascinating. We kind of morphed from the idea of the technology of mapping into our privacy concerns. And I wanted to bring back to an issue with regard to use of the technology for navigation.
Yes.
And how it becomes kind of a, we put blinders on when we do that.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I want to point out, in terms of privacy, all you got to do is read Fahrenheit 451 or 1984. We're there. We're in the 1954 prediction that Bradbury had in terms of the ability for television walls that can tell where we are, things that go in our ears that they described in 1951. So I'm not set on that. Let's get back to the technology. I'm a voter. I'm from Mystic, home of the Charles W. Morgan that's going to be relaunched this spring. And I am very sad to see how much my fellow voters are relying only on GPS and the technology. An example was coming years ago through, about 4 years ago, through the fog in a 100-year-old boat with a good friend of mine who wanted to stop because there was fog, but he had GPS. Well, it's kind of a long story. Our biggest concern was other boaters going through Buzzards Bay at great rates of speed because they could rely on this technology without regards to whether they might run somebody else down.
Oblivious to what's actually around them, but confident in their oblivion that they were headed toward their goal.
Oh, that's
and I, we had a kind of a contest, if I can just finish this up.
Yeah.
He did GPS navigation. I did map navigation, what I call seat of the pants. I wasn't using dividers. I wasn't using parallel rules. I was just using my arm to get a rough idea.
Yeah.
I was almost as accurate as he was. But when we got into Sakonnet River, his GPS, he had three on board. All three of them failed.
Wow.
I had to take over the navigation. So we lose those skills. Coast Guard is no longer teaching celestial navigation. It's a thing where it's very sad to see that we are becoming, again, very myopic. If our GPS goes down, we don't know where the heck we are.
Yeah.
And we need to make sure that we recognize this technology has to be used wisely.
Richard, I'm so glad you raised that. Let me take it to Hiawatha Bray. Yes, we've been super empowered by all the advances that you describe, Hiawatha.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, you never know when the satellite goes out, when the system goes down, and how rapidly do we become directionally challenged just from lack of practice?
Well, no, I think you've got a fair point, but I don't think that kind of thing is a problem that most of us are going to run into. I don't know that that many of us are boaters, but he's making a great point, I would think, for anybody who does do that kind of thing, or for people who fly airplanes, for example. I do not know what the current state of training is, but I would assume that they still have to teach these guys basic standard navigational tools, because if they don't know how, you're exactly right. It's not so much that the satellite system is going to go out. That's very unlikely to happen. But whatever device you happen to be using, well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you could have run into all kinds of problems, but you always have to take into account the human factor. My favorite example is the KAL-007 aircraft that was shot down over Russia when it strayed into Russian airspace back in 1983. As far as we know, there was nothing wrong with any of the navigational gear on that plane, and the people knew how to use it, but somebody apparently turned a knob to the wrong setting, and it was as simple as that. The plane did not follow the waypoints. Instead, it flew right into Russia, and nobody even bothered to check.
I mean, I'm just so struck. Here's Richard doing Seat of the Pass in the fog. You know, I'm struck at these days, you get in the car, turn that you're following the GPS instructions, and you can kind of feel that the human mind can turn off the directional awareness and just turn here, turn there, turn here, turn there. Whereas back in the day, many people at all moments had a kind of sense of where they were. That spatial awareness can diminish.
Well, you certainly, I mean, I'm sure everyone who's used GPS has had a moment where that thing tells it something and you go, that's wrong. I know that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And you go a different direction and you're right.
Sure.
That always does happen. These things are not perfect and you have to use common sense. That's always going to be true. I agree with that 100%.
Chad, in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Chad, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, what is the deal with the Wi-Fi networking pertaining mainly to iPhones right now, but it's something that they kind of slipped into the new iOS update. And what I hear it's about is that instead of having a router in your house, your phone, cell phone, is going to be the router, And I switched it off because it's kind of a battery saver, but it's in the privacy settings and location services and system services.
I'm not sure that has anything to do with this, but I think you're talking about that feature that allows the iPhones on iOS 7 to talk to each other directly. And there is a feature like that, but I don't think it really has much to do with navigation.
Well, but Chad, thanks for calling. You do describe Wi-Fi being roped into the world of navigation.
Oh, absolutely. And that's another thing. That's a Boston idea. These guys in Boston who started a company called Skyhook, and they were trying to come up with some other business model for a Wi-Fi. And in the process, they drove around and mapped the location of a bunch of Wi-Fi routers, and then it suddenly hit them. Wait a minute. Couldn't we receive the signals from those Wi-Fi routers and connect them to latitude and longitude so that as you drove down the road, the Wi-Fi that you encountered on the street would tell you where you are? And it turned out it worked. It worked. It's not as accurate as GPS, but it's amazingly close. It'll get you to within about 100 feet. And now that is standard equipment on just about all smartphones.
Hiawatha, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation from Haifa, Israel, Udi Dagan. He's founder of a company called Split. It is known as the anti-social app. All kinds of social location apps, Foursquare saying, I'm here, where are you? Udi Dagan, yours does the opposite. What's the point of Split?
Well, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great to be here. Well, the app Split, or Split Anti-Social, as it's in the App Store, was designed perfectly to help us avoid unwanted encounters. Or in other words, we all have people we prefer not to meet. We just kind of turn everything upside down and create a system that helps you just avoid these encounters.
So you're using data from Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Foursquare that's got geolocation on it. And what, if you don't want to meet your ex-girlfriend or boyfriend or wife or husband, this will alert you where they are when they come into your realm.
Yeah, not only alert you, it will also offer an escape route just to keep you safe, you know. But, I mean, the discussion before was really, really intriguing, and it's really important to connect this because, yeah, we basically take all our data from social networks, from Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Foursquare, but we also use GPS location as our own network. As regard to privacy, which is really, really something we care about, as location is really sensitive, we only provide, you know, we kind of make a network which also only expose your location when you need to. And in our case, it's only when you're really close to your ex, for example, then the app will expose your location.
Watch out, turn left, because we can easily see how Split could turn into stalk if you're trying to keep track of other people. We're talking about mapping, navigation, and the new material for mapping us. I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point app. I mean, I may want to avoid somebody, but if they're on my list, why am I not just figuring out where they are and stalking them?
Yeah, well, it's very simple. I mean, in Split, the user has control over his exposure, his or her exposure, and it's the amount you can be very exposed, or you can choose not to be.
Yeah, how do you do that? Let's say my ex doesn't want to be tracked by me, but I want to track her. Aren't you on my side in this?
Yeah, well, for instance, if I chose to avoid you, I can tell where you are. I cannot tell where you are unless you are logged on to Split.
Oh.
Or you provided social location, social input, social network input.
Oh, but everybody's providing social network network input these days.
Yeah, but you also have to be very close to me,
uh-huh.
Very close to my surroundings.
Okay.
I mean, I cannot see on the map everyone. It doesn't show. But if I chose to avoid you, you have to be logged on to Split or otherwise provide a social input which everybody can see in your social network account. Otherwise, I cannot see you.
It's amazing. Hiawatha, here we are not only using GPS to know where everybody is, But now turning it around, not things you want to find, but things you actually want to avoid. Talk about an evolution of mapping
absolutely.
And navigation.
I've never heard of anything quite like it. It's an interesting approach, definitely. Most of the time, though, we're mainly, you know, either trying to find or be found. And this is, well, it's different.
Odie, are people signing up? Help me avoid X, Y, or Z, my boss, my I don't know what.
I guess both of you want some time, you know, have a pint on the way home without anyone bothering you. It's basically about regaining control over our life. I mean, there's a thin line these days between the real world and the virtual world. And while we keep the privacy and everything is kept really seriously, we provide like the perfect antisocial experience. And you know, it's really fun and it's also shown the map places where your avoidees tend to frequent based on, again, only on available data.
It's really amazing. Udi Dagan, we're nearly out of time here. Founder of Split, joining us from Haifa, Israel today. Udi, good luck to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Did he coin a new term, avoidees?
I think so.
I think so.
You write about the next challenge. It seems like the opposite of mapping, but forming a cocoon of locational privacy around ourselves.
Yeah, I'm not sure we know entirely how to do it yet. There are people like I mentioned, a guy, Joe Jonas.
IBM?
Yeah, at IBM, who is working on trying to
find ways.
Jeff Jonas at IBM, who is working on technologies that would allow you to use your location devices without giving away your location to other
people. Is this cloaking? Is that what that is?
It's a sort of a cloaking system. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some aspects of this which could have been done if anyone had thought of them ahead of time. Classic example being the EasyPass tollway system
mm-hmm.
that gives away our location when you drive down a toll road.
Mm-hmm.
They could have designed it so that you didn't get your name associated with the EasyPass, but they didn't. And so when you use an EasyPass, they know who it is, or at least who bought that particular pass. And what they're saying is in future, when we develop technologies like this, let's see if we can find some way to separate identity from location so that we can keep some of our privacy.
Do you think that's going to happen? I mean, you may think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I might too. A lot of listeners may. But surely there's a lot of commercial interest and, face it, surveillance, law enforcement interest in knowing where are you and who are you.
It's going to be a tough one because, for example, if you tried to do that now with EasyPass, every police agency in the country would
forget
say, no, no way, we want to know your name. So, yeah, it's going to be a real challenge to get that to happen.
Hiawatha Bridge. 2 minutes from a couple of interests into this era where we're the material being mapped, the sort of path that led to Google Maps and also now the OpenStreetMap, kind of our involvement in the mapping of the world today.
Absolutely. I mean, it really goes back a ways. I'm fascinated by this whole story. The first of all, the whole idea of mapping the entire planet, relying on satellite photography and how that begins during the Cold War, the amazing threat that America felt from Russia. People forget that back then we had no idea what Russia was doing, and everybody was terrified of another Pearl Harbor. So this whole idea of satellite mapping grows out of this early desperate need to figure out what's going on there.
They were shooting down the spy planes.
They were shooting down spy planes. And the very day that Francis Gary Powers is convicted in a Russian court for flying over their country illegally, we got the first spy satellite pictures of Russia. And it was just like it was like night and day.
And there's the base of Google Maps.
And well, that's where it really begins because that means that now you have a practical way of using space satellites to basically map the entire planet. And, of course, the early ones were very primitive. They were incredible. You dropped a film canister from outer space, and it fell back, and they caught it in midair. It was just like a Rube Goldberg. It was unbelievable. They wanted originally to use TV, but the television technology of the time just was too crude.
Mm-hmm.
But then, by the late 60s, early 70s, you get the invention of really practical digital photography. And so now you have spy satellites that basically take pictures, extremely high resolution, and beam them back to Earth. Now, by the 1980s, this technology is no longer just being limited to the U.S. government and other governments, and you start seeing commercial companies in places like France starting to launch their own satellites and saying, we'll sell you basically spy imagery. And now even the U.S. government buys these kinds of satellite imagery from companies like Digital Globe. The CIA buys a lot of their spy photos.
We've got it down from space. We've got it from the Earth, from ground level, at the sort of Wi-Fi level of navigation.
Absolutely.
And this people mapping as they go.
Absolutely, because, you know, you have Google building using these maps. They go out and they buy the satellite images, and they use them to build their own commercial map. But over in Britain, there was a guy named Steve Coast who was looking at this, and he wanted to do something similar using mapping data from British sources. But in Britain, all that stuff was copyrighted, and he couldn't get it. So he said, wait a minute, thanks to the existence of GPS, I can have people create their own maps. We can use little GPS receivers and walk through the world or cycle through the world or drive through the world and make maps. So he created a movement called OpenStreetMap. Little by little, they mapped all of Britain, and now they are systematically engaged in mapping the entire world using nothing but volunteers armed with GPS, or often little more than a notepad, because you can update the map just by walking down the street and writing names and then calling or going to the OpenStreetMap site and looking at their map and putting in information as you go.
So updating, what's here, what's absolutely here, what's here.
There are tens of thousands of people all over the world doing it. Now, Google sees this. They think it's a great idea. They have a feature like that now. If you see something that's not on a Google map, you can actually log on and basically update the map of the world anytime you see something. I did that. I was in Congo last year, and there were places I found while I was walking through Kinshasa that I couldn't see on the map. And then I said, okay, I went back to my computer, and I said, you need to add this, you need to add this, and Google just put it there, and it's up there on Google Maps now.
So what's on the planet around us, filled out, line by line by line by line,
right,
in greater and greater detail?
By each individual person with a smartphone or a GPS receiver. We can all do it now.
And, of course, while we're doing that, we become part of the story. Hiawatha Bray is with us. His new book is You Are Here. We map the Earth, and the Earth
originally
maps us. Let's go to our listeners. Brianna is calling from Oklahoma City. Brianna, you're on the air. Thank you very much for calling.
Hi, Tom.
No, our cell phones beam out where we are, and the world's beginning to talk back. Retail coupons, the whole thing.
Absolutely, and that is becoming commonplace for a bunch of various retail companies. Subway comes immediately to mind, where if you are registered for this kind of service, they will basically ping you when you are near a Subway and tell you about interesting and valuable deals. There are a bunch of advertising companies that do that. I mean, almost all, if you have a smartphone and you have ad-based apps, you're doing it already, at least to some extent, because the ads that you see on those ad-based apps will be sent to you based in part on where you are. They won't send you an ad for something for a retail chain that doesn't exist in your neighborhood. They may very well send you an ad for something specifically happening in Boston or Oklahoma City or so forth. That's already going on.
Or even in the aisle of a supermarket. I mean, they're responding Bluetooth-wise to whoever's standing in front of them.
Well, that's starting to happen now. You're seeing things like Apple's new service called iBeacon, where you walk into an Apple store and it is basically talking to your phone and telling you about things that you can find inside the store. There are a bunch of retailers experimenting with this. There has been a bit of a backlash, though.
Mm-hmm.
There was one company, Nordstrom, that was starting to experiment with using it, and they heard from, I think, Senator Al Franken and a bunch of other people said, wait a minute, you're tracking your customers as they walk through the store? And then they said, no, we're not going to do that after all. But it's an idea that really has a lot of appeal, and not just for retail purposes. For example, when you're inside an airport, you're inside a sports arena, it would be great to know exactly where you are. And increasingly, there are apps that let you do that. There's an app right now. If you walk into a Walgreens, you can get an app. Every single Walgreens in America is mapped. You punch up the app, it says, oh, you're in the Walgreens in Braintree. And it will tell you here's which aisle has which item in it, and it'll just guide you right there.
So the store is kind of x-rayed and revealed to you.
Absolutely.
Meanwhile, you may be x-rayed and revealed to the store.
That's
whoever
right.
else is watching. Hiawatha Bray's new book is You Are Here. He's with me in the studio here in Boston. I want to bring San Francisco in here right now, if we can. David Peterson joins us there. He's vice president of mobile advertising at YP. It's a search and advertising company. Builds profiles of users, could be you, based on where they've been to better advertise to them. David Peterson, thank you very much for joining us from California today.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what's your company do, sir?
Yeah, so we do very much like what you and Hiawatha were talking about. We use location signals that we see coming off of mobile phones to tag users, to understand users' behavior based on their location. Because as you've talked about, a lot of times the places that you go, that you visit, say a lot about who you are as a person. And that's very interesting data. It's very interesting for sociology reasons, I'm sure, but it's also very interesting for mobile advertising. So it starts off with the fact that in the digital ecosystem, as I'm sure that you're aware, the digital media industry creates a lot of data when you surf the web, the places that you surf, the IP addresses, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And in mobile, sometimes that involves, although not always, the use of location data. So that's something coming off of your phone when you have opted into that via an app, for example, or a website that you surf. And so we're one of the parties that sees that information, and what we do with it is we look up every one of those data points, and we say, what does it say about you as a user? So if you look at my data, for example, you'll see a data point that says when you look it up on a map, oh, you were in the parking lot of a Target south of San Francisco.
Okay.
And that allows us to tag me as a Target shopper. You'll also frequently see me in airports in the middle of the week, and thus I'm a business traveler. You'll also see me at campgrounds and national parks, and that really says a lot about who I am and the kinds of things I like to do.
So if you track me for, I don't know, 6 weeks, 6 months, you know where I am all the time, and you know what's at those places where I am, how much can you tell about me, David?
Yeah, so the way that we think about it is, as we see those location data points, what we're doing is going, looking up each one of them and building a tag. And that we don't really think that it's useful to track users over time and to find all the places that they go and memorize that. What we're much more interested in is what are the kinds of things that we learn about a user, about the places that they go. And so what we're interested in doing is just coming up with a set of tags associated with each user. It just tells us things about you as a person that might be useful for advertising purposes.
So you don't call that tracking, but you are building a profile of me based on the content of the places I've been?
Yes, that's right. That's right. So you can think about it as a collection of tags. And so if you look at me, I'm Target shopper, business traveler, you know, very infrequent fast food restaurant eater, national park goer, et cetera. That's right.
And you sell that then to companies who will do what with it or who are doing what with it?
Yeah, so we don't actually sell the data. What's interesting is we, and what's important to know, is that we have advertisers come to us who are interested in talking to users who do various things. It's very interesting to advertisers to be able to talk to people who shop in different kinds of retail stores, for example, or quick serve restaurants or other kinds of what we call vertical categories. And so what we do is we build and run advertising campaigns for those advertisers. We run directly and serve advertisements in mobile apps and on mobile websites based on this information that we have. And so this is where if you use apps or you use the mobile web, what you see is a lot of advertising in that medium. It's an ad-supported medium. A lot of this stuff is free for you, the consumer. And so the way that that gets paid for is it's ad-supported. It's similar to what you see online or even the newspaper.
Is it by name? Do they know it's me, Tom Ashbrook, that they'd be advertising to? Or in your world, am I just a number?
That is a great question. You're just a number. You are XYZ123. We don't know who you are at all.
And yet you may know a lot about what that number, me, will do. David Peterson, standby in San Francisco, Hiawatha. Here we are.
Yeah.
I mean, this is mapping, which includes location mapping, and I have read that.
Mm-hmm.
Follow somebody for, I don't know, 3 months, and you can predict with a very high degree of accuracy what they'll do next at any given moment.
Which, if you think about it, isn't that shocking. Most of us are highly predictable creatures. I don't think you'd even need 3 months. I mean,
yeah.
If you know somebody reasonably well.
Here's where he goes to work, or here's where she goes to work, or shop, or you name
sure,
it.
Sure, for work, shop, church, whatever. And it's not that hard to figure out. That's exactly right. And of course, I think companies like, YP now, used to be known as Sense Networks,
mm-hmm.
companies like this are indeed trying to be careful about not revealing information about individuals. But it does give them the ability to profile basically populations that they can sell to advertisers. Personally, I don't find this kind of thing particularly disturbing. I think it's kind of interesting and even cool.
It brings all kinds of convenience to people,
mm-hmm.
but it also over time has some really interesting implications. We're looking at maps, navigation, and the era today where we are the mapped. Are we headed toward that Minority Report vision where the world's constantly talking to us because it sort of recognizes us by profile, if not by name?
I don't know, but I'm worried a little bit about it, especially because, I mean, a company like YP isn't using it this way, but you know that there is considerable interest in this whole idea of predictive computing, where you could actually predict what a human being is going to do based on this information, not just the location data, but all the other information that is being collected about people. I mean, this is a small example, but it always makes me vaguely nervous. There are already several states that use a computer program to decide whether or not to give convicts parole. And one of the things they do is they look at the past history of this person and other people who have committed similar crimes, and they try to predict whether or not that person is likely to commit a crime. Now, I mean, it makes a certain amount of sense, but you sit there wondering, how far down that path do we really want to go? And I always get a little nervous about attempts to try to predict human behavior by where we are and what we do.
David Peterson in San Francisco, I suppose part of your job is to make us feel comfortable and good about all this. But, I mean, we've all seen Minority Report. This predictive business is, in fact, I would think part of the value proposition of your business? I mean, how sophisticated do you think this will be able to become?
Well, honestly, I think that's a little far-fetched. I mean, I think that what we see happening in the advertising industry is that all of this information is collected, for example, under opt-in. And then we also give you multiple opportunities to opt out. Like, this is all based on, and I think we strongly support the idea of consumer choice in all of this. So I think that I personally haven't seen Minority Report, but it sounds rather...
probably seen you.
Right. And so what I would say is that what we're big proponents of at YP is giving the consumer choice and respecting consumer privacy. And I think you're going to see more of that. Right. And so that starts with the fact that what we see in the mobile advertising ecosystem is that all of this is collected under what we call, it's called opt-in. It's that users have said, okay, I'm giving you permission to use this data. But, you know, furthermore, we like to offer multiple opportunities to opt out as well. So for somebody to say, you know, this is something that I'm really not comfortable with. And so I think that's, I would probably contrast that pretty strongly with the idea that we're all being tracked all the time and it's completely out of our control, because it isn't.
Hiawatha, unlike the planet, we have will,
yeah.
And people opt in very willingly a lot.
Absolutely.
Because of the convenience.
Oh, no. What do you think? It's absolutely true. You can opt out of this stuff. You can turn off the location tracking. But it is...
To a point.
Well, you're right. So let's understand this. First of all, the moment you have a cell phone, you're being tracked by definition. It's the nature of the technology.
By the nearest cell tower.
Exactly. They have to know where you are. So the only way to completely eliminate it is to have no cell phone at all.
Mm-hmm.
But with all of these apps and other things, yeah, you can turn them off completely. Nobody is then being able to track you. I mean, a lot of people don't know this. You can download GPS software for your phone that does not talk to the phone company or to Apple or to Google and is a purely standalone product. So you can do navigation.
But as a rule, we don't opt
as
out
rule,
in this
we don't.
Way. The social
right.
pressure is there. The convenience pressure is there.
Absolutely.
And we make each of ourselves dots on a map.
Absolutely, because it's almost irresistible. It is so useful that people find it almost irresistible. I know I find it irresistible. I can't imagine not going with my location system.
David Peterson, how much more convenience or sort of tailored marketing do you expect will come at us over the years with technology business like yours?
Well, in general, as an industry forecast, I'd say more rather than less. And so I'd like to start that by saying I don't think you're going to see more ads. I think that we already see, you know, a reasonable number of ads or the right number of ads that supports the industry medium. I think this is what we're really talking about is the difference between seeing ads that are useful or interesting to you and ones that are not, right? So I think what all of these technologies are doing is saying, okay, as you are cruising the web or you're surfing apps, and these apps build all their content and they hire people to do it and they need some sort of financial revenue source to support that. The way that they do it is frequently through advertising. It's something that users love, right? You don't have to pay for things, and then it's ad supported. But it really helps the equation if you can start to deliver things, ads that people are really interested in.
Irresistibly convenient. Use the app. You're on the map. YP does it. David Peterson is vice president there for mobile advertising in San Francisco. David Peterson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, Tom.
Hiawatha Brace, stand by. I'm Tom.
Well, as you should know by now, there is no such thing as 100% security. Personally, I doubt whether there's more than 50% possibility of security. No matter whether you're at the top, in the ruling class, or a person on the street. But these cell phones are dangerous, and most of the time you don't need a cell phone. There are still pay phones around. And you can pull your battery and your little piece of solid state chip out of that phone. But most people just have a habit of talking all the time. And that's the problem we run into. Like I say, I can sit at my breakfast table and watch dozens and dozens of cars go by my house in the morning on the way to work. And like I've said before, I venture that 3 out of 5, sometimes 4 out of 5, are on a cell phone. But that's not our concern. You cannot protect the sheep. There's no way of protecting the sheep. No matter what the right wing says, we got to We got to wake them up. We got to wake them up. You're not going to wake them up because that's just the way they are. They are destined to be sheep all their lives. Very few sheep can ever escape that particular job. So there's things you can do. Now, in the home, you shouldn't have a remote phone type operation. I must admit, I've got one, but I'm changing it back to hardwired. Or I have maybe a couple of hardwired that whenever there's something of importance, business, and you want to keep private, you go to the hardwired phone. And for just regular conversations with the neighbor or something like that, you can pick up the remote phone if you like the freedom of having that remote phone where you can walk out in the yard or something. But ideally, you'd go back to hardwired phones in your house. And of course, the other thing is unplug. If you have a GPS, just unplug it and in your car. And the GPS is nice, but maybe we should go back to just using maps. In a lone wolf situation where you don't know what you're going to have to be doing, I think you better not forget how to use maps. In fact, I think that I'm going to quit relying on a GPS. I don't do it very often, but once in a while, when I go to some place quite a ways distance from my house. But I think I'm just going to strictly go back to maps. Just like Jimmy Carter went back to regular mail. And I've said this before, the mails are still pretty secure. And I've told people before, you know, you can get these priority mail envelopes and you can send cash or whatever you want to send. And it's pretty damn secure, much more secure now than anything on the internet. Anyhow, the reason I'm bringing you this kind of programming is for training. It's for training. And you may say, well, I don't need that now. Well, yeah, but you may need it later. You probably will need it later. So what you need to do is train yourself and educate yourself now for when you're really going to need to know it. And if you don't do it, well, then if you don't listen, you'll have to feel. Don't forget that most of the information you receive is designed to scare you. That's why you have to sift through it very carefully and understand what is nonsense just to scare you. And the masses of material you get from the right wing, who they always put out things to scare you. Look what they're doing to us now. Tune in tomorrow and see what they're going to do tomorrow. Instead of saying, this is what they think they'd like to do to us, but this is what I think we will do to them. You never see articles like that when something bad happens to the system where the right wing goes crazy about saying, hey, isn't this great, man? I'm glad that happened. So you can dump about 50% at least of all the right-wing, even racial material you receive, because it has no immediate bearing on your life or other lone wolves' lives. And so you're continually deluged and filled with information that you don't really need. Stick to the real important stuff. The right wing deals with anything that's shocking, 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 no matter whether it's true or not, whether it's false flag or not. Their main thing is to put out shocking material. Perfect example of that is Alex Jones, which a majority of what he puts out is just to scare people and get them to listen to him because, oh, it's exciting, you know, my dull life is really made wonderful by Alex Jones telling me all this stuff that the world's coming to an end. And to a lesser degree, Rush Scumbaugh, and then you got Hannity and And then you've got some of them on the left, too. So anyhow, even when it comes to Obama, of course, the Republicans, it's politics. Even if they liked Obama, the job of the Republicans is to get the power and get the authority over you. And the Democrats say, no, we want the power and authority over the common people. But a hell of a lot of stuff they attack Obama for is false flag nonsense, too. But, of course, all of most white racists, especially in the right wing, say, oh, well, that's got to be true because he's a nigger. He's a black man, or he's a half white man. But a whole lot of the stuff they attack Obama for is not really a wrong thing or a bad thing. So we got to learn to make value judgments on what people say. And you can't automatically discount everything somebody says just because they are of a different race or something like that. And if you do, that's not a smart lone wolf. A lone wolf's going to listen to everything, analyze it carefully, no matter where it comes from, and keep the good stuff and dump the bad stuff. But Republicans, for an example with Obama, anything that he does is wrong. Anything he says is wrong. And, of course, that's their game. And then the fear game, you know, about the insurance and everything else. Everything's based on fear. Well, I do think it's sort of funny about how GM took all that money from Obama or the federal government. And at the same time, they were screwing the people. General Motors decided not to change an ignition switch, eventually linked to the deaths of at least 13 people, because it would have added about a dollar to the cost of each car, according to an internal GM document provided to the U.S. congressional investigators. Well, that's been going on for a long time. I mean, remember, what's his name? Ralph. Ralph Nader that exposed the Pinto. Remember the Pinto? And didn't have any protection for the gas tank in the back, and they were getting rear-ended and people being burnt alive and barbecued. And, of course, the company didn't want to do anything about it, but he made a big deal and he did a good job as far as I'm concerned. Interesting about the Pinto was it had a German-made engine. It was a very good engine. You could drive the thing till the rest of the car fell apart, but the engine wouldn't quit. But they so the Germans did a good job on the engine, and Americans did a shit job on the body and the protection of the gas tank in the rear. Personally, I don't think it's true that the government didn't know about it. But GM is, once they got the money in their pocket, they're more powerful than the government. So I'll bet you anything that whistleblowers had told the government about this problem a long time ago. This is one of those you can't win for losing story. I think I mentioned this yesterday, but anyhow, Kitty Blair, Germany's porn star, as if they only got one porn star, who was the face of the National Democratic right wing conservative Christian party in Germany, and behind the scenes neo-Nazi, and got sacked after the party's leadership found out she'd been having sex with a man of African descent, is confronted by another blow. She's been denounced by the porn industry as neo-Nazi. Talk about you can't win from losing, and the hypocrites in the National Democratic Party, They're a laugh. That's their version of the conservative right wing in this country, and the same ones that just went out there to Las Vegas and kissed the ass of the big Jew out there. When are people going to see through these phony right wing conservative parties? I mean, you know, it's because they're always thinking they can get the job done easily. Yeah, these white guys, they think it, white women, they think there's some easy way to confront our opposition. They think, whoa, man, we'll get a political party, and we'll show them. All the political party ends up being is a method where a few leaders rake in a lot of money, but the big picture never changes. In fact, with this National Democratic Party, they'll probably start recruiting Arabs too, just like the Le Pen party is doing over in France. We got a lot of U.S. people that are allegedly racially conscious that just think that Le Pen party is just the super nuts, and the German Democratic Party, National Democratic Party, is just super nuts, because they may have a couple of guys from the Wehrmacht or SS, old time guys that are, you know, they're not dangerous or anything else, that are in the party, and everybody wink, 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 nod, nod. It's all bullshit. But it won't change, because there's always quite a number of people out there, a percentage of the so-called white activists that think there's an easy way out of this thing besides blood, sweat, and tears. Speaking of false flag bullshit, here's another one out of Arizona. Kathy Herod's Center for Arizona Policy hates gays, abortions, and likes to tell politicians what to do. Days after Governor Jan Brewer vetoed Senate Bill 1062, which would have allowed businesses to discriminate against gays and others based upon business owners' sincerely held belief and religious beliefs, Kathy Herod retreated to the studio of a friendly TV talking head, fellow conservative, former pastor, con man, and former presidential candidate Mike Huckabee. The theme of that, I can't stand that son of a bitch. Every time I see him on TV, I want to put my fist through the tube. Of course, we don't have the tube anymore, and I guess I'd be putting my fist mainly through the wall. The theme of that episode of Fox News showed Huckabee might have been summed up as, quote, "What's all the fuss about?" Huckabee compared the bill's language with that of the 1993 Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act, signed into law by President Bill Clinton to set a high bar for the government's ability to burden the free exercise of religion. Oh, yeah, the religion's really burdened, I'll tell you that. They really have a problem. The Christians are so picked on in this country, it's unbelievable. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah, okay. For example, the RFRA is one reason Native Americans or Mongols aren't prohibited from using hallucinogenic plant peyote in religious ceremonies. Arizona passed its own version of the RFRA in 1999. Now, who gives a shit where the Indians smoke peyote? Do you care? Do I care? Does that affect my life at all? But everybody wants to make big deals out of this kind of stuff. And what Herod Centers for Arizona Policy proposed with in 1962 was a very relative minor change to a bill that was non-controversial in 1999 and in 1993 to the federal level. Well, the bill would have allowed a kosher deli to refuse to cater an event with bacon-wrapped shrimp, Huckabee claimed. Well, who cares? Who the fuck cares? Though how a customer would compel any business against its will to serve bacon-wrapped shrimp is perhaps known only to the Fox host. I don't give a shit if the Jew in the place hits the guy over the head with a baseball bat and says, "Get out of my fucking shop." What do I care? What do we care? What do lone wolves care about this nonsense? Of course, Herod agreed, claiming an unnamed small minority was able to make hay out of it. Mean like politicians. The governor's veto was really for a bill that didn't exist, Herod told Huckabee in her lisping, childlike voice. The law would have protected businesses from having to forego their religious beliefs. You know how strong most people's religious beliefs are? Hardly at all. But when they get into a certain spot, they declare from the top of the mountains how religious they are. Most of them have hardly any religion, if any religion at all. It's all tokenism. But they act like they'd fight to the death. Of course, they wouldn't. You know that. Never discussed was that New Mexico has a law protecting the lesbian, gay, bisexual, monkey-fucking, transgender community from discrimination, though Arizona doesn't. Well, you can discriminate against these people anytime you want. You just don't hang out where they hang out. You don't have them over to your house. I mean, you can discriminate against anybody. It's still, discrimination is still naturally legal if you do it the right way. Discrimination against homosexuals in Arizona is legal. Well, of course, you can't make it a law anyhow. If people want to discriminate, they're going to discriminate. There's a million ways to discriminate, you fools, except in cities such as Phoenix, Tempe, and Tucson, which have adopted ordinances protecting LGBT people. Well, how about protecting some of the street people that get robbed and raped on the streets? Significantly, Herod also mentioned the Hobby Lobby. Oh, I can't read any more of this bullshit. You see, this is right-wing trash. They're going to go on and on about the fags, and they're going to go on about the lesbians. They're going on and on about the transgender. That's to keep your mind off the real big, important stuff. That's all this is. And to strike terror into the timid hearts of the Zionist Christians. Here's an example right here in this town I live next to. They had a big flare-up about ordinances, whether to have chickens inside the city limits or not have chickens inside the city limits. Well, it's, of course, just common sense that if you had one chicken in the backyard, I don't think there's a problem, but you got 50 chickens in your backyard, you're a Mexican. Or maybe turkeys in the backyard. But like out in Southern California where I live, they had fighting cocks right behind the apartment I lived in after we left the house. Fighting cocks, and they were, boy, they're loud as hell in the morning. And I took care of it. I put up with it for maybe a couple of months. Then I took care of it. I'm not going to tell you how I took care of it, but I took care of it. The Mexican mestizos that lived there just went away. Point is that this whole city will go mad about it, and the Chamber of Commerce and the City Hall or the people will come in there and rant and rave on both sides, and with common sense, you know. I don't think most people who live in the city really want to have chickens. Too hard to take care of. Too hard to keep cornered and keep fenced in, too. And then you got roaming dogs that are always around and getting worse. The more Mexicans you have in a community, the more stray dogs, and they go after the chickens and everything else. But anyhow, these are the kind of things that they use to keep the sheep always in a quandary, always uptight. Oh, what are we going to do about the chickens? Oh, shit. Just shoot the son of a bitch. You got a mestizo neighbor with chickens, and chickens cause you trouble. Well, just a good quiet air rifle will take care of that. Then don't do like most sheep and run right down to the local bar and brag to all your buddies how you zapped the chickens. Well, we'll close out today with some interesting information that I know you've been dying to hear. Starting at around 7 years of age, American children believe that black kids feel less pain than their white counterparts, according to a recent study by the British Journal of Developmental Psychology. Color them probably Jewish. For the study, researchers asked 5 to 7 to 10-year-olds who were mostly white, to rate the amount of pain they would feel in 10 situations, including biting their tongues or hitting their heads. Then the children rated the amount of pain they believed two other children, a black child and a white child, would feel in response to the same incidents. At 5 years old, a racial bias related to pain did not show up in the researchers' findings. But the bias was clearly present in the 7-year-olds, and it was even stronger in the 10-year-olds. Might that be because they've had more experience by then with pain? Before that, they've been more protected? Other kinds of racial biases pop up around this age. According to Rebecca Dorr, a researcher at the University of Virginia, who is also the study's lead investigator, for instance, young children tend to want to play with other children of their own race. But these biases tend to fade away over time. In contrast, the racial bias in perception of pain increases over time. Wow. According to a report on how young children learn about race, Aaron Winkler at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, there's a myth that children cannot develop racial prejudices until they are taught to do so. Oh? But current psychological research suggests that children recognize race and develop racial biases on their own by ages 3 to 5. Furthermore, children's racial beliefs are not absolutely tied to their parents or those of other close family members, the report emphasizes. The need to talk about race with children at an early age, because they're going to turn into flaming Klansmen if you don't. Part of the importance of the University of Virginia study is that it shows definitely that racial bias in perception of pain does exist by age 7 and is stronger by age 10. This can help parents and teachers know when to intervene to try to prevent these biases from emerging. Dorr said in an interview with UVA Today that intervention needs to happen at the latest by age 10, but preferably much earlier. Well, I guess they're assuming that there are not differences in pain between the races. And I'm not so sure that is true. I don't know. Anyhow, we find out that just because your kid comes home yelling nigger, nigger, nigger doesn't necessarily mean that you taught him that, because they could become racist without you. That's it for today. For Thursday, Terrible Tommy's off and clear and getting ready for another rainstorm in here. Boy, I'll tell you, it was coming down earlier. 14.5, man. And just remember, most of what you hear is bullshit, except when you listen to me, and I would never lead you wrong.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song.
Five.